Welcome to the Bible Breakdown. It's a black man and woman in America who no longer identify as believers. This show contains adult languages, themes, and isn't meant for children. As black people, we respect the history of the black church in America, but its current state is massively abusive, and we think the Bible might be part of the problem. Listen and let us know what you think. Peace. Welcome back to the Bible Breakdown. I'm your host, Kat.
And I am TK.
Hello, TK.
Hello.
How are you feeling today?
Feel pretty good. You are the master of your own destiny and all that type of jazz. Got a lot of negative situations going on, but as somebody said, if you can't change something, change the way you think about it.
Cool. All right. Well, sorry to hear about the negative situations, but at least one thing you can always count on is the word. We're here to read the Bible today. We're starting a new book of the Bible, 1 Kings, of the New Revised Standard Version. We're going to be reading chapters 1-3. They're kind of long, too. We're going into like a new era of the Israel/Judaic kingdom, which I also feel like is always just a very big word for what was probably just a very small collection of tribes. But, you know, whatevs. People really like this book because it's famous. I'm realizing now, like, I was listening to a thing like, Christmas has been over, but they were talking about how, like, a lot of people have a Santa kink. And they were getting into it, and it's because Santa's a celebrity. Like, there's just something very intoxicating about the nature of celebrity and being famous, and a lot of times that just it plays tricks on our minds.
So speaking of kinks, that's actually interesting. One of my new
friends, say lots of interesting things. I don't know why you're surprised.
My new friend Carolyn, we've been
Caroline. Like,
she is in the kink space.
Okay.
Identifies as pansexual and stuff like that. And I've
she sounds interesting.
Very cool person, actually. Real cool person. And we had a conversation about, like, I can't remember what sparked it, but it was something about kinks. And I had to break down, like, I think that a kink that I have is like women who are bitches to me.
Ooh, that's a very real kink.
Like,
like, especially guys who like being yelled at, like, that's a, yeah, like, there's plenty of, it's always interesting to me, like, with kinks, because it's not always about sex either. Like, just a big amount of men who will pay for women to, like, yell at them, like, just call and yell at them and berate them. Like, there's so many women, like, who get paid money for that.
But it's a limit. I do realize it's a limit to it too. But speaking of that, also, you didn't watch this show, but Blue Eye Samurai, they touch on men who, because they go to a geisha house in one of the episodes, and whatever the madam talks about, like, all these powerful men who come in here.
Let's get something straight. Geisha are not prostitutes.
Okay.
Geisha just translates to artists. So they would have
been
you're probably at a brothel.
It was a brothel. I'm sorry. Anyway, there was in a brothel house, and the madam was just talking about all the fucking men who come in here and want to be like, live out their fantasies. Some, you know, it's just like tickling them. Some is reading poetry to them. Some is being like pegged. You know, that TV series, Blue Eye Samurai on Netflix. It came out in November. I just watched it last weekend, all 8 episodes. It's been renewed for season 2.
Oh, good.
Highly, highly recommend.
You know, I avoided it at first because a lot of times I kind of feel a way when it's a movie about an Asian culture and it's centered around a white person. So
I know I did too, but
it was kind of like was it a Tom Cruise movie, The Last Samurai?
But she's half white. She's not fully white. She's still Asian, but at the time that it takes place, to be like a mixed person is infinitely more of a disgrace than maybe it would be today.
It's so still like, not pretty cool now either, but
I figured it's not. But but so, like then,
okay. So it, that
kind of plays into like her psychology of like how she deals with shit, because she has to deal with like essentially being a mixed person, and she's not being accepted by the Asian or Japanese culture rather, and she's not being accepted by these white people. So
yeah, tragic mulatto, got it.
Yeah,
and it just made me think of this joke Paul Mooney used to tell where he's talking about Hollywood goes too far, because you got the last samurai starring Tom Cruise, and a movie called The Mexican starring Brad Pitt, and he's like, I have a idea for a movie, it's called The Last Nigga on Earth starring Tom Hanks. It is like, yeah, it gets like that. But because I remember this is an old movie, I just saw the title and I was super excited to watch it, and it was called The African Queen, and it was like starring Katharine Hepburn. I was like, damn it, I wanted to see like some like super luxurious black woman, and it's about a boat.
Oh my gosh. I've never seen that movie. I've heard of it, but I've never seen it.
The African Queen is a boat.
Yes. No, I think you brought that up before, actually.
Have I? Maybe. Sounds like
or
me.
Somebody said that, but anyway.
Anyway. Okay, so yeah, today we're going to, we're getting towards the end of David's reign. I think our general consensus... Oh, we need to do what happened last time on Bible Breakdown.
Last time on Bible Breakdown, David had a song of thanksgiving. David also, there were the last words of David, which ended up talking about David's mighty men as well. We talked about David's census of Israel and Judah, and we talked about judgment and David's sin. And David's altar on the threshing floor. Why do I not remember any of this?
It's been a couple weeks.
Yeah.
Since we've recorded, and it wasn't very impactful. Like I said, I don't really find the story of David all that inspiring. He was a warlord who killed a lot of people and gives credit to God for helping him, destroy all of his enemies. And that's generally why he's venerated in certain religious sects. But if I'm just reading about him from their source material, he was not a very good person. And, just made his bones by killing a bunch of people. And cutting off foreskins. God hates foreskins. He made them, but he hates them.
Okay. I agree. I don't think David's been great. The only thing I think I brought out this entire time is, he gets shit done, but he's clearly...
But it's bad shit.
Well, it's self-serving shit.
No, it's bad. I think it...
It's bad, yes, but it's self-serving.
Course, once again, just because that doesn't make any difference, most of the bad stuff people do is self-serving. Like when people
but
steal,
in his mind,
that's self-serving.
He probably thinks he's not being bad.
That doesn't make it less bad.
I don't know. Then we can argue that there is no good and bad. There just is.
We can. That's a matter of ethics. Like I think we can say that there are a set of ethics, and one of the very basic ones are you don't kill people, because if we live in a society where it's okay to kill people, no one's ever safe, and you're like it's just a courtesy that we extend and owe to every human being to not kill them.
I agree. I don't believe in intentionally harming other people. I don't think that's cool.
Yeah. So, you're going to read about David in his old age.
We're starting with First Kings, right? First?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Kings 1.
The first thing I have is the struggle for the succession.
You know what? You're right. I am on the wrong version. I'm on the ESV.
I need to
go to thank you for the correction, sir. New Revised Standard Version. The struggle for succession. Yes, now I am all brought up. Ooh, but I do love Succession. Did you watch Succession on HBO?
No, I never did.
Oh man, listener who's listened to Succession, we're on the same level right now. It's so good. Like, I love any Succession sort of story. That's why I liked Game of Thrones.
Why?
Because the whole series is about the struggle for succession. It's a power struggle. To me, that's what it comes down to.
I mean, yeah, I heard the show is good. I planned on watching it. Was it like 4 seasons or something?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it goes to show like being rich isn't what people think it is.
Yeah, but I feel like that, I don't know, maybe just the older you get, like now that I'm in my 30s, I kind of figured that out. Like, it's not, I mean, not that I still don't want to make money, but you don't need to make this ungodly amount of money to be happy.
Yeah, there's some evidence it kind of works against you. All right, I'm ready to find out what happens. I actually kind of remember this a little bit. I remember kind of enjoying this part of the story. Let's go for it.
The struggle for succession. King David was old and advanced in years, and although they covered him with clothes, he could not get warm. So his servant said to him, "Let a young virgin be sought for my king, the Lord, for my lord the king, and let her wait on the king and be his attendant. Let her lie in your bosom so that my lord the king may be warm." So they searched for a girl throughout all the territory of Israel and found
a beautiful girl.
So they searched for a beautiful girl throughout all the territory of Israel and found Abishag the Shunammite and brought her to the king. The girl was very beautiful. She became the king's attendant and served him, but the king did not know her sexually. Now, Adonijah, son of Haggith, exalted himself, saying, "I will be the king." He prepared for himself chariots and horsemen and 50 men to run before him. His father had never at any time displeased him by asking, Why have you done this? Why have you done thus and so? He was also a very handsome man. He was born next after Absalom. He conferred with Joab, son of Zariah, and with the priest Abiathar, and they supported Adonijah. But the priests Zadok and Benaiah, son of Jehoiada, and the prophet Nathan and Shimei and Rei and David's own warriors did not side with Adonijah. Adonijah sacrificed sheep, oxen, and fattened cattle by the stone Zoheleth, which is beside in Rogel, and he invited all his brothers, the king's sons, and all the royal officials of Judah, but he did not invite the prophet Nathan or Benaiah or the warriors or his brother Solomon. Then Nathan said to Bathsheba, Solomon's mother, "Have you not heard that Adonijah, son of Haggith, has become king, and our Lord David does not know it? Now, therefore, come, let me give you advice, so that you may save your own life, the life of your son Solomon. Go in at once to King David and say to him, 'Did you not, my lord the king, swear to your servant, saying, your son Solomon shall succeed me as king, and he shall sit on my throne? Why then is Adonijah king?' Then while you are still there speaking with the king, I will come in after you and confirm your words." So Bathsheba went to the king in his room. The king was very old. Abishag the Shunammite was attending the king. Bathsheba bowed and did obeisance to the king, and the king said, "What do you wish?" He said to him, "My lord, you swore to your servant by the Lord your God, saying, 'Your son Solomon shall succeed me as a king, and he shall sit on my throne.' But now, suddenly, Adonijah has become king through you, my lord the king. Though you, my lord the king, do not know it. He has sacrificed oxen, fattened cattle, and sheep in abundance, and has invited all the children of the king, the priests Abiathar and Joab, the commander of the army. But your servant Solomon he has not invited. But you, my lord the king, the eyes of all Israel are on you to tell them who shall sit on the throne of my lord the king after him. Otherwise, it will come to pass, when my lord the king sleeps with his ancestors, that my son Solomon and I will be counted offenders." While she was still speaking with the king, the prophet Nathan came in. The king was told, "Here is the prophet Nathan." When he came in before the king, he did obeisance to the king with his face to the ground. Nathan said, "My lord the king, have you said Adonijah shall succeed me as king, and he shall sit on my throne? For today he has gone down and has sacrificed oxen, fattened cattle, and sheep in abundance, and has invited all the king's children. Joab, the commander of the army, and the priest Abiathar, who are now eating and drinking before him, and saying, 'Long live King Adonijah,' but he did not invite me. Your servant and the priest Zadok and Benaiah, son of Jehoiada, and your servant Solomon, has this been brought about, my lord the king, and you have not let your servants know who should sit on the throne of my lord the king after him." Whew, that was a question, by the way. The ascension of Solomon. King David answered, "Summon Bathsheba to me." Just a minute. Okay. King David answered, "Summon Bathsheba to me." So she came into the king's presence and stood before the king. The king swore, saying, "As the Lord lives, who has saved my life from every adversity, as I swore to you by the Lord, the God of Israel, your son Solomon shall succeed me as king, and he shall sit on my throne in my place, so that I would do this day." Then Bathsheba bowed with her face to the ground and did obeisance to the king and said, "May my lord King David live forever." King David said, "Summon to me the priest Zadok, the prophet Nathan, and Benaiah, son of Jehoiada." When they came before the king said to them, "Take with you the servants of your lord and have my son Solomon ride on my own mule. And bring down to Gien. There let the priest Zadok and the prophet Nathan anoint him king over Israel. Then blow the trumpet and say, 'Long live King Solomon.' You shall go up following him. Let him enter and sit on my throne. He shall be king in my place, for I have appointed him to be ruler over Israel and over Judah." Benaiah, son of Jehoiada, answered the king, "Amen. May the Lord, the God of my king, the God of my lord the king, so ordain. As the Lord has been with my lord the king, so may he be with Solomon, and may his throne greater than the throne of my lord King David." So the priest Zadok, the prophet Nathan, and Benaiah, son of Jehoiada, and the Cherethites and the Pelethites went down and had Solomon ride on King David's mule, and led him to Gien. There the priest Zadok took the horn of oil from the tent and anointed Solomon. Then they blew the trumpet, and all the people said, "Long live King Solomon!" And all the people went up following him, playing on pipes and rejoicing with a great joy, so that the earth quaked at their noise. Adonijah and all the guests who were with him heard it as they finished feasting. When Joab heard the sound of the trumpet, he said, "Why is the city in an uproar?" While he was still speaking, Jonathan, son of priest Abiathar, arrived. Adonijah said, "Come in, for you are a worthy man, and surely you bring good news." Jonathan answered Adonijah, "No, for our Lord King David, he has made Solomon king. The king has sent with him the priest Zadok, the prophet Nathan, and Benaiah, son of Jehoiada, and the Cherethites and the Pelethites, and they had him ride on the king's mule. The priest Zadok and the prophet Nathan have anointed him king again, and they have gone up from their rejoicing, so that their city is in an uproar. This is the noise that you have heard. Solomon now sits on the royal throne. Moreover, the king's servants came to congratulate our lord King David, saying, 'May God make the name of Solomon more famous than yours, and make his throne greater than your throne.'" The king bowed in worship on the bed and went on to pray thus: Blessed be the Lord, the God of Israel, who today has granted one of my offspring to sit on my throne and permitted me to witness it." Then all the guests of Adonijah got up trembling and went their own ways. Adonijah, fearing Solomon, got up and went to grasp the horns of the altar. Solomon was informed Adonijah is afraid of King Solomon. "See, he has laid hold of the horns of the altar, saying, 'Let King Solomon swear to me that he will not kill his first servant with the sword.'" So Solomon responded, "If he proves to be a worthy man, not one of his hairs shall fall to the ground. But if wickedness is found in him, he shall die." Then King Solomon sent to have him brought down from the altar. He came to do obeisance to King Solomon, and Solomon said to him, "Go home."
Whew. Wow, that was a lot of drama.
It was very much a lot. Oh my gosh.
Yes. Okay, so I was saying earlier, I love stories of succession. So in kingdoms and empires around the world, similar things happen quite a bit. When there's maybe not a clear heir, or maybe multiple people who could be heirs. This is another instance where the Bible just kind of springs a new character on us out of nowhere. Now Adonijah, son of Haggith, he just sort of shows up. He's never really been mentioned before, but now he's in the running to be king. He must have some resources. What was interesting to me was the conversations that Bathsheba and Nathan were having, because generally the priest class and the sort of, you know, concubine class really wouldn't need to talk all that much. So it makes me think that Bathsheba, I just know, like, when I've read about palace intrigues, especially in the Forbidden City and like ancient China, a lot of times the concubines or courtesans or consorts to the king or wives, the ones that did better politically were the ones who were bribing the eunuchs, because the eunuchs ran the palace. And in this case, it sounds like they might not have had eunuchs, but the priests kind of performed that role of a lot of the internal power struggles. They were kind of in on that. So to me, it makes me think that Nathan must have been on her payroll since they're conversing, which is interesting, which makes me think like, oh, Bathsheba, okay, she's a player in this game, which we don't see a lot of times with women in the Bible. Yeah. And the fact that she's looking out for the interest of her son, which makes sense, because if someone else does a power grab, a lot of times what you do is you kill all of the other people who could possibly be successors to the throne. Like, that's how you consolidate power. So, this was a wild one. But it sounds like Solomon was pretty magnanimous. He went ahead and just let him go.
Yeah, I mean, because isn't Solomon supposed to be the good king or whatever?
He's supposed to be wise. I think we're about to get to that now, where God's like, hey, I'll give you anything you want. And, well, I won't spoil it, but yeah. What were your takeaways?
One thing I thought is like, are these other than in biblical context, are these people never actually mentioned in like historical context?
I feel like that's a question for Bard.
Okay, we'll enlist.
Like, are there secondary sources to collaborate these stories? That's a good question. I think there is historical evidence that Judah and Israel were two separate kingdoms at one time. I think that's something that's been maybe collaborated. Like I said, there's no outside sources for the story of the Hebrews being freed by Moses from Egypt. That's something that doesn't have any secondary sources. So, which is odd, because the Egyptians kept a bunch of records.
Interesting. Let's see. Are there secondary sources to prove that King David of the Bible was real? Question mark. And Bard is loading and telling me, the question of King David's historical existence is complex, and there's no definitive answer. While the Bible is the primary source for his life and reign, it states its status as a religious text makes it challenging to use as sole evidence for historical confirmation. So, no. Which brings me to my
that was
takeaway.
A nice way of saying it, though.
Which brings me to my take, like, because, you know, in throughout history, I mean, you hear about, like, Napoleon, Alexander the Great, and, like, just all these types of people, which made me think, like, all right, well, if this person was as famous in a historical context
as the Bible's
certainly,
claiming.
As the Bible is claiming, we should have some evidence of that, and we don't. Which, I mean, I would say disappointing, but maybe not, because then that means that none of those people actually died. So, I don't know.
Once again, considering that the bulk of this is based on an oral tradition that was passed down for hundreds, possibly thousands of years, and finally got written down, once again, we would be basing our foundational beliefs on a game of telephone. And we've all played that as children, and not only telephone, but going through different dialects, languages, and then just the human propensity for exaggeration to punch up the story. I think we not so long talked about the Cat Williams episode and how even though he wasn't wrong about everything, he was clearly exaggerating about several things. Oh, also, this I might take this out, but I was talking to some comedians this week, and one of them was like, I've seen Cat Williams do coke.
I actually have some alternative stuff to say, because the week we talked about him, I was saying how Cat, you know, he was moving a lot, he was doing a lot, and they actually have an analysis video out there with a body language expert, like, breaking down, you know, what that could mean for him as a person. And it was very interesting to watch. I didn't watch the whole thing, but it was enough.
You should ask Bard about the legitimacy of body language experts.
Oh, okay. Are they like fucking crystal ball ladies?
Just ask.
What is the legitimacy of body language experts? See, now this makes me, according to Bard on my Google Pixel Fold, the legitimacy of body language experts is a complex and controversial topic, with arguments both for and against their claims of expertise. Here's a breakdown. Arguments for legitimacy. Research on specific nonverbal cues, some specific nonverbal behaviors like microexpressions and pupil dilation have shown some level of correlation with certain emotions in control research settings. Some body language experts focus on these specific cues and train individuals to recognize them accurately. Potential application in specific fields. Training in basic nonverbal communication can be useful in certain fields like law enforcement, sales, and customer service, where understanding basic emotional cues can aid in communication and de-escalation. Anecdotal evidence. Many people report success in applying basic body language principles to improve their interactions with themselves, with others. Arguments against legitimacy are, I'm not going to read all this, but overgeneralization and misinterpretation, context matters, context matters says nonverbal cues are context dependent and can have different meanings depending on their culture, background, individual differences in specific situation, lack of scientific rigor. Much body language expertise is based on pop psychology books and workshops, not rigorous scientific research. Many claims lack solid empirical evidence to support them, and rise a risk of bias and manipulation. Misusing body language knowledge can lead to profoundly bias and manipulation of others. So
what I got from video that is
possible bullshit.
Yes, but because what I got from that was the, it seems like the one that has more scientific rigor behind it is the one where micro movements in your face and your eye dilation. And I do know a lot of mentalists use that, like people who do sort of magician and mentalism tricks, like that's what they use. But once again, it wouldn't be used to figure out if someone was on drugs. Other than maybe the dilation of the eyes, like that's usually pretty, a lot of people do, like doctors especially, kind of use that to as kind of a clue. But like I said, to me, I'm inclined to, like I said, this is third hand information. I didn't see it myself, but the person I was talking to, pretty reliable source. I believe them when they say they've seen him snort coke. It's pretty common. Like, it's not even like, I'm not even putting him down for that. It's something that a lot of people in entertainment do. A lot of times because the hours, it's hard to, I hear a lot of DJs do a lot of coke because it's hard to stay up that late and keep your energy up. Like it's a thing. So, you know, peace to Cat Williams. I want to make sure that he's, but yeah, the body language stuff, I remember, cause people have always tried to use that to see if like people were guilty or not in courtrooms or whatever. It's just not reliable.
Well, as somebody who works in the entertainment industry, I find it very, just another tool I can put in my toolkit, not obviously for reality purposes, but
you mean cocaine?
body language.
Oh, okay.
I do not need cocaine. Although, I do need more energy, but that can be supported by working out and eating healthy.
And sleeping more.
I did get sleep today. Probably why, you know, when I woke up and I missed my alarm, because I like to play basketball, as I probably brought up on this podcast endless times, I was so upset that I didn't go. But not going to lie, like lately, like my knees have been like just hurting. I don't know if I just overexerted them over the last few times I like played basketball. But they have been hurting. And so I literally woke up and was like, fuck, I missed my alarm. And then I was like, I thought about you, because then I was like, you know, Kat always says, like, well, maybe this happened for a reason. Like, maybe, you know, I missed it because I would have gotten in some accident or something. Or maybe
it is cold.
Would have got injured or something today. So I was just like, you know what? I needed the rest anyway. It's fine. But I'll probably go to the gym later.
If you're walking around, breathing, and taking care of your business, you're living right.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, so you're doing, and like I said, you're doing way better than a lot. You're doing better than most.
I am, which is why I'm not going to be mad, because like a lot of things that's been going on, I'm in a blessed situation.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say highly favored. I don't believe in that.
I know. I was kidding. Like, that's church talk. I was just being silly.
I don't believe in that. I actually
I always feel like it's a big slap in the face to everyone who's not highly favored. It's like, God just doesn't like you as much as he likes me because I'm so awesome.
I just never thought I was that special. I mean, if I'm just being honest, I just never thought I was that special.
I've always thought I was pretty special.
Nah. I think I'm unique. I think I'm rare.
But I don't think I'm special to everybody. Like, I'm special to me and the people who care about me. But, like, I don't think I'm special, like, to the universe.
You know, yes, I agree with that. I also think that there's the issue that comes with that is a lot of people never unpack that, though. They think I'm special. I'm the exception to the rule. Nothing will happen to me until something happens that shakes their faith. And so I just learned early on that I'm not really that. And I need, like, I was watching something the other day where they were saying, you know, the thing with people is that people who are like super talented is like they think everything comes easy. A lot of them like think and expect everything to come easy, but it's actually like the people who put in the hard work that end up surpassing a lot of talented people, because they actually know that they're not as talented, so they have to work harder.
And the fact that you have to, because I feel like to truly succeed in any field, you have to be elevating. Like, you can't plateau, because even if you're at a high level and don't increase, you're gonna fall off.
Yeah, which is how I've been feeling lately with my eating habits, getting bloated and stuff like that. So I think I've cracked the code to that. You got to eat at the beginning. You have to eat like early in the morning, like not early, but you have to eat breakfast essentially, I think.
For me, you got to set the tone correctly.
Because if I don't do that, then the rest of the day, I'm trying to get over hungry and I'm trying to like snack and I'm eating bullshit. But this morning,
you
like,
get, it's so upset when I call you grouchy. Like, that's what happens when you are grumpy. Which one is it?
Hangry?
No, I don't call you hangry. I'll literally use the word, I think, grumpy. And you're like, don't say that. Like, but it's like you do. Like, if you don't eat, you get kind of grumpy.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I'm just, this morning, I'm not, because I literally stayed up late last night meal prepping my breakfast today. Mm-hmm. And then I ate that. And now I don't feel, and then I got, you know, probably what, 7 hours of sleep. So then it was like, all right, I feel pretty good.
Yeah, it's so important to be good to yourself. Like, I think that's the thing. Like, I do, like I said, like, I don't feel special to the universe, but I do feel special to myself. And I really try to cherish myself and my body, because it's my doing stuff machine. And, you know, it's so easy to take the simplest things for granted, but the fact that I'm able to move around without pain is pretty great.
I agree.
All right, I'm going to go ahead and read 1 Kings 2. David's instruction to Solomon. When David's time to die drew near. Oh, wait, sorry. No, back it up. What? Wait, can we back it up? Okay, because we did all this talking. What was the point of us telling us about the girl, the beautiful girl who attended David, but he never slept with? Like, to me, that was weird. Like, they could have left that out. I feel like he did fuck her and got her pregnant, and they wanted proof that he never fucked her so they didn't have to take care of the baby.
So they just threw it in here?
Yes, because otherwise there's no point of bringing this up. Like, to bring up, it's like, well, he's cold. Why don't we get him, you know, a little hoe he can, you know, cuddle up with? Because if it's like that, just get him a puppy. Like, they had dogs back then. It's like, why? It's like, let's get a girl, a beautiful girl. But he ain't fuck her, though. The king did not know her sexually. At this point, how would they even know that for real? We all know how fucking works. You can fuck somebody without you knowing about it. Like, there's no point in bringing up he never fucked her. Because the author of this, like, how would you even know?
Yeah, at this point, I feel like they bring up stories in here that are... I feel like they just have a lot of storylines that don't go anywhere.
Abishag. Maybe she'll come up later. You know what? I'm being overly critical. Because I was complaining before that they don't set up characters, so maybe they're setting her up for something later. Even though I kind of don't remember her showing up again. I've read this before.
We'll see.
1 Kings 2. When David's time to die drew near... He charged his son Solomon, saying, I'm about to go the way of all the earth. Be strong, be courageous, and keep the charge of the Lord your God, walking in his ways and keeping his statutes, his commands, his ordinances, and his testimonies, as it is written in the law of Moses, so that you may prosper in all that you do and wherever you turn. Then the Lord will establish his word that he spoke concerning me. If your heirs take heed in their way to walk before me in faithfulness with all their heart and with all their soul, there shall not fail you a successor on the throne of Israel. Moreover, you know also what Joab, son of Zereth, did to me, how he dealt with the two commanders of the armies of Israel, Abner, son of Ner, and Amasa, son of Jether, whom he murdered, retaliating in time of peace of blood that had been shed in war, and putting the blood of war on the belt around his waist and on the sandals on his feet. Act, therefore, according to your wisdom, but do not let his gray head go down to Sheol in peace. Deal loyally, however, with the sons of Barzillai, the Gilead, and let them be among those who eat at your table, for with such loyalty they met me when I fled from your brother Absalom. There is also with you Shimeah, son of Gera, the Benjamite from Bahurim, who cursed me with a terrible curse on the day when I went to Mahanaim. But when he came down to meet me at the Jordan, I swore to him by the Lord, I will not put you to death with the sword. Therefore, do not hold him guiltless, for you are a wise man, and you will know what you ought to do with him, and you must bring his gray head down with blood to Sheol. Death of David. Then David slept with his ancestors and was buried in the city of David. The time that David reigned over Israel was 40 years. He reigned 7 years in Hebron and 33 years in Jerusalem. So Solomon sat on the throne of his father David, and his kingdom was firmly established. Solomon consolidates his reign. Then Adonijah, son of Haggith, came to Bathsheba, Solomon's mother. She asked, "Do you come peaceably?" He said, "Peaceably." Then he said, "May I have a word with you?" She said, "Go on." He said, "You know that the kingdom was mine and that all Israel expected me to reign. However, the kingdom has turned about and became my brother's, for it was his from the Lord. And now I have one request to make of you. Do not refuse me." She said to him, "Go on." He said, "Please ask King Solomon, he will not refuse you, to give me Abishag the Shunammite as my wife." Bathsheba said, "Very well, I will speak to the king on your behalf." So Bathsheba went to King Solomon to speak on to speak to him on behalf of Adonijah. The king rose to meet her and bowed down to her. Then he sat on his throne and had a throne brought for the king's mother, and she sat on his right. Then she said, "I have one small request to make of you. Do not refuse me." And the king said to her, "Make your request, my mother, for I will not refuse you." She said, "Let Abishag the Shunammite be given to your brother Adonijah as his wife." King Solomon answered his mother, "And why do you ask Abishag the Shunammite for Adonijah? For him, ask for him the kingdom as well, for he is my elder brother. Ask not only for him, but also for the priest Abiathar and for the son and for Joab, son of Zerah, or Zeruthia." I'm sorry. King Solomon swore by the Lord, "So may God do to me and do more also, for Adonijah has devised this scheme at risk of his life. Now, therefore, as the Lord lives, who has established me and placed me on the throne of my father David, and who has made me a house as he promised, today Adonijah shall be put to death." So King Solomon sent Benaiah, son of Jehoiada. He struck him down and he died. Then the king said to the priest Abiathar, "Go to Anathoth, to your estate, for you deserve death. But I will not at this time put you to death, because you carried the ark of the Lord God before my father David, and because you share in all the hardships my father endured." So Solomon banished Abiathar from being priest to the Lord, thus fulfilling the word of the Lord that he had spoken concerning the house of Eli and Shiloh. When the news came to Joab, for Joab had supported Adonijah, though he had not supported Absalom, Joab fled the tent of the Lord, grasping the horns of the altar. When it was told King Solomon, "Joab has fled the tent of the Lord and now is beside the altar," Solomon set Benaiah, son of Jeruiah, saying, "Go, strike him down." So Benaiah came to the tent of the Lord and said to him, "The king commands, come out." But he said, "No, I will die here." Then Benaiah brought the king word again, saying, "Thus Joab, and thus he answered me." The king replied to him, "Do as he says, strike him down and bury him, and thus take away from me and my father's house the guilt for the blood that Joab shed without cause. The Lord will bring back his bloody deeds on his own head, because without the knowledge of my father David, he attacked and killed with the sword two men more righteous and better than himself, Abner, son of Ner, commander of the army of Israel, and Amasa, son of Jether, commander of the army of Judah, so that their blood shall come back on the head of Joab and on the head of his descendants forever. But to David and his descendants, and to his house and to his throne, there shall be peace from the Lord forevermore." Then Benaiah, son of Jehoiada, went up and struck him down and killed him. And he was buried at his own house near the wilderness. And the king put Benaiah, son of Jehoiada, over the army in his place. And the king put the priest Zadok in the place of Abiathar. Then the king sent and summoned Shimei and said to him, "Build yourself a house in Jerusalem and live there, but do not go out from there to any place whatever. And for on that day you go out and cross the Wadi Kidron, know for certain that you shall die. Your blood shall be on your own head." Then Shimei said to the king, "The sentence is fair, as my lord the king has said, so your servant would do." So Shimei lived in Jerusalem many days. But it happened at the end of 3 years that two of Shimei's slaves ran away to King Ashik, son of Maacah of Gath. When it was told to Shimei, "Your slaves are in Gath," Shimei arose and saddled a donkey and went to Ashen in Gath to search for his slaves. Shimei went and brought his slaves from Gath. When Solomon was told that Shimei had gone from Jerusalem to Gath and returned, the king sent and summoned Shimei and said to him, "Did I not make you swear by the Lord and solemnly adjure you, saying, 'No, for certain that on the day that you go out to any place whatever, you shall die?' And you said to me, 'The sentence is fair, I accept.' Why then have you not kept your oath to the Lord and the commandment with which I charged you? The king also said to Shimei, you know in your own heart all the evil that you did to my father David, so the Lord will bring back your evil on your own head. But King Solomon shall be blessed, and the throne of David shall be established before the Lord forever. Then the king commanded Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, and he went out and struck him down, and he died. So the kingdom was established in the hand of Solomon. Okay, so, go ahead.
I was going to say, this gave me heavy, I don't know, for some reason this reminded me of Godfather.
Oh, the sons and the power.
Yeah, it's basically that. So that's my succession stories that I like, or the Godfather type stuff. But no, just because, you know, David's pretty much instructing Solomon like Don Corleone instructed Michael. Like, this is what essentially you're going to expect as a king, and watch out for this, and, you know about this. And I don't know, just gave me like that. I had images of that scene where they're in the garden.
You know what? I think that is a very apt comparison. Yeah, you've got one person who's at the end of their reign, and they're handing over the keys of power.
Also, is somebody who now, who grew up watching The Godfather and Goodfellas and stuff like that, particularly The Godfather, though, there's like this air of, like, you know, honor and respect and all this shit that, as a human being, you kind of feel like you should aspire to, minus the killing. But then when you, it's almost kind of like what we talk about with the Bible with David, like, they, it's like this aura of this all-powerful person who just was so, I don't know, like a good person, quote unquote. But then when you think about deeper, like, this is kind of just that version. Like, these people were actually not good people, and I say that for, you know, like Don Corleone, Michael Corleone, like, they're actually not good people, and maybe we shouldn't
venerate,
look
them.
At them. I was gonna say idolize them, but venerate, I don't know, sure, but
just admire. I don't know. We shouldn't admire them. We can be entertained by them, and like you said, because you can make the, I think you're right, like, you can make the argument that Michael Corleone got shit done, you know. Like, he was an effective leader, but what he was leading was, you know, a very it's all a power and resource grab. Like, instead of, you know, ruling justly, like, you can definitely make the case that they were better Dons than some of the other Dons, but, you know, they're still, you know, everything's built on murder and drugs. And
do you think, because I've often thought about, like, what the difference between Vito and Michael was. I mean, the obvious difference is, like, Vito seemed more to operate with more compassion, and Michael seemed just very cold and calculating.
I think it's because Michael grew up rich. Like, Vito grew up, like, poor, and kind of had more of a community mindset, I think, just from, and he was also from another country.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
See, my mind immediately went to the fact that it was just a different time. Like, it's harder to, like, when Michael was in it, like, Vito got in on the come up. Michael got in when the shit's already going down.
You know what we're doing? We're talking about The Godfather instead of the Bible, because The Godfather's such a better story.
Okay, The Godfather is such a better story. I guess to switch it over to that, with David, because I hear more about David than Solomon, personally. That's just been my personal experience. So, with David, I just feel like more people would be apt to quote and or reference David than Solomon. Like, Solomon always seems to,
but if you think about it, the back burner. David was a musician. He probably just had better lines.
David was a musician?
Yeah.
Yeah,
okay. He was always dancing and singing before the Lord. You know, he'd always come into town after victory, and he'd get the people a show. You know, I think that was, I think David was more entertaining and had more drama, and we've been talking about it. That's what gets people's attention. That's how you get clicks.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, that's, it's not one of our better features, so yeah, but yeah, David dies. That's a big deal though. And then we finally have, was it Adonijah? He's finally killed. It's like, okay, well, mm-hmm. It turns out I was kind of right. I was kind of wrong, but you know, what's her name? The chick from,
the mother.
Abishag.
Mm-hmm.
The beautiful girl.
Not the mother.
Not Bathsheba.
Servant.
Yeah, the mama's Bathsheba. But yeah, so Abinadab asked for Abishag for her hand in marriage, and that's what gets them killed. Like Solomon was like, I don't want to hear that shit. Why don't he just ask for the kingdom? So to me, this Abishag character is very intriguing to me, because even though she's not mentioned a lot, she's already caused a guy to get deaded. And it's like, weirdly, I don't even know any other place in the Bible where they go out of their way to be like, oh, he ain't fucker though. Like, the king did not know her sexually. To me, that's a very weird line. I'm gonna say that. Like, to me, that gives me pause, because it's like, that's something you don't even need to say. That's like if you leave a store, it's like, hey, I didn't steal anything. It's like, okay. like I said, like if I go through the point of like, if I'm telling you like, oh, you know, this weekend I hung out.
So maybe he didn't fuck her. Maybe just everybody around him fucked her.
Ooh, that's a very
And only reason I bring that up is because I was watching a movie called, I think it's called The House, and it stars Will Ferrell and Tina Fey.
I already like it.
Not Tina Fey. It might not be Tina Fey. I'm sorry. Another prominent white woman actress, but
why'd you have to mention she was white?
It's not even the point I'm about to make has nothing to do with them. It's okay. Another character in there that's their neighbor, and he has like a gambling addiction. His wife is divorcing him, and so he ends up creating an illegal gambling operation with Will Ferrell, and
I think it was Amy Poehler.
Amy Poehler. That's
yeah, because they're trying to raise money for their daughter to go to college.
Yeah. Okay. So, you saying what you just said made me think of when their neighbor's character's wife confronts him, and he's like, "I'm not gambling anymore," and she's just like, "Okay." She's like, "Why the fuck would you say that?" But he's clearly, he's not gambling, but he's clearly doing
right.
Something.
It's like if I left the mall and I was like, I didn't shop. It's like, okay. Like, yeah. Yeah. It's that to me it's a little weird. So yeah, Abishag. And so when Solomon, because actually I like your theory a little better. David wasn't fucking her, but everybody else was.
Well, what counts as knowing her sexually? Because maybe she was...
Oh, it's a little Bill Clinton-ish, where it's like, what?
Maybe she was still like, just stand over there and be naked, and I'll just like masturbate.
Ooh, or like you brought up the kink earlier, maybe she just yelled at him while he like, you know, played with his nipples. Like, it could have been all kind of stuff.
To be fair, I don't like... necessarily women to yell at me. It's the difference.
No, this is established,
it's something
canon for our podcast now.
It's something about
Putting that in the description.
It's something about perceivably strong women like acting tough, but then sexually like they are like very submissive to you.
Okay. Oh, it's the contrast.
Yes.
Okay.
Like, cause then it's like when you see them after that, and they still try to act that like this, like, I know the real you.
Well, I think Patrice O'Neal brought that up in a stand-up one time where he was talking about he likes really ratchet women because he likes being able to calm them. You know, like there's something about subduing them or whatever. But yes.
Because when that was posed to me the other day, that made me think, and then we can jump back to the Bible, because it made me think about like stuff you and my friend D have said, like, why the fuck do you continue to fuck with these bitches? And like, I have literally, and then so when Carolyn brought it up, I literally thought about like, because I'm not familiar with like kinks. Like, I think of kink as like BDSM and shit like that. Like, and then as they were explaining to me like different shit, I was like, oh, maybe that is my kink.
See, you
maybe
know this if you listen to Horrible Decisions, like I told you to. Like I
do listen to them. Oh, you do? Sometimes. Okay. Not all the time.
I feel like I've learned a lot about the kink space.
Oh, speaking of that,
they have a kink of the week.
They had one of my, what's the other girl? The one that I think is actually cute.
I think you like,
she has the mole on her. Yeah, Wheezy. She had a funny moment on,
is she Andrew. The one with the braids?
Yeah, it's not the one to be wearing the finger wave shit. I feel like she's trash.
Be nice. I like Mandy. I like both of them, but you're talking about Wheezy.
Yes, Wheezy is, to me, more fuckable. But...
So that makes them more likable?
No. I think they both are very... Just physically, I'm not all that attracted to Mandy.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure she'll yell at you.
Regardless, I think the content that they both produce is fantastic.
Okay, that's true.
No, she had a funny moment. Wheezy had a funny moment. She was on Andrew Schultz's podcast, and they were asking her about a mutual friend that they had, and Wheezy was like, oh, well, I've never, we've never had sex or something like that. And then Andrew Schultz was like, yeah, and then Andrew Schultz was like, oh, do you think the reason y'all never had sex is because he smashed Mandy?
Oh.
And then it was just like, yeah, that's the exact look she gave. For our listeners, you can't see Kat's look, but that was, so then, and it was,
because I don't know, it was like one of the, do you know if they were talking about Alex?
I don't know. I have to find it.
I just assume because they both know Alex, and like he's somebody, and that's someone who Wheezy always talks about, like she would never fuck him. That's like her brother. But if that's wild, if Alex fucked Mandy, that is wild.
Yeah. Okay. So that's probably who they were talking about.
Oh.
Because the exact look you gave is the exact look Wheezy gave when it was brought up.
He used to be their producer.
This is why friendships end.
I mean, yeah, that's crazy. Oh, wow. That's cool. Interesting, though. Interesting. But yes, listeners, please educate yourself on the kink space. Horrible Decisions is a great sex education podcast. Actually, did you listen to the last episode where Wheezy was talking about the foursome she was in?
No, I didn't.
It was pretty funny because they really got into the a thing they get written into a lot about is people are like, I want to have a three-way. How do I do it? And blah, blah, blah. And because they're sick of answering it. But one thing they did address was the fact that most three-ways, Mandy was saying like 90% of the time ends up with someone in tears because it didn't turn out how they thought it was going to.
I've not done one yet, but it's on my list. And I don't think you can do it with a partner who feels too possessive of you. I think you have to do it with somebody with people who were kind of all equals, like in how we operate.
I would like, yes, I could see how that is a thing. I would like to congratulate us from going to talking about the Bible to threesomes. I think that's really awesome of us. And I just would like to officially say for the podcast, in case anyone's wondering, I've never had a three-way either. But quite honestly, having sex with one other person is almost too many people.
But you've had a four-way?
No. What's her name? Wheezy was talking about having a four-way.
I'm sorry. We need to get back to the Bible. You saying this like basically what even sparked all of this was how somebody said how the woman, like they mentioned, David didn't fuck her though.
Abishag.
And it made that Abishag. But that also makes me think of something I saw, because this ties into sex as well. On Twitter, where this woman was explaining, like, when a guy, she was explaining the difference between getting a train rain on you and in a threesome.
Okay.
And she's like, this not the same thing.
No.
Like, a threesome is we're all in the same room. We're all interacting at the same time. Mm-hmm. A train is like a guy comes fuck me and then leaves. And then another guy comes. So the comments was like, so she basically just admitted she got a train right now.
Well,
internet is so fucking rude.
It's undefeated. The internet's undefeated. But also we should get into a place where we don't automatically judge people who want that experience.
I don't. And I that's one of my triggers now when people start trying to demonize shit about sex. Like, yeah. I don't like that because I feel like
it's like the comments are I don't want to. I like the phrase, I don't want to yuck your yum. You know, like if that, because that's the thing, like you find there's people who, I think that's what's interesting about learning about the kink space is that you learn there's just all kind of people. Like, people like different stuff, and we don't, as long as it's adult and consensual, I don't have anything to say about it.
Yeah, I'm working on a project that deals with, not necessarily kink space, but because I know a lot of this is kind of men have an aversion to anything that's just not straightforward sex. So I'm working on a project now that kind of redefines how we view certain things.
Well, we definitely need more sex education as a nation, so I'm all for it. Do you want to read this Kings 3 so we can be done
with
the Bible?
I do not want to read it, but I will read it because that is my job.
At least this one's shorter.
Let me get back to the Bible. 1 Kings 3. Solomon's prayer for wisdom. Solomon made a marriage alliance with Pharaoh, king of Egypt. He took Pharaoh's daughter and brought her into the city of David until he had finished building his own house in the house of the Lord and the wall around Jerusalem. The people were sacrificing at the high places, however, because no house had yet been built for the name of the Lord. Solomon loved the Lord, walking to the statues of his father. Solomon loved the Lord. Walking to the statues of his father, he sacrificed and offered incense at the high places. The king went to Gibeon to sacrifice there, for that was the principal high place. Solomon used to offer 1,000 burnt offerings on that altar. At Gibeon, the Lord appeared to Solomon in a dream by night, and God said, "Ask what I should give you." And Solomon said, "You have shown great and steadfast love to your servant and my father David, because he walked before you in faithfulness and righteousness and in uprightness of heart towards you, and you have kept for him this great and steadfast love, and had given him a son to sit on his throne today. And now, O Lord my God, you have made your servant king in place of my father David. Although I am only a little girl, I do not know how to go out
child.
Or come." A little girl. What did I get girl from? I don't know. I just be reading, man. Although I am only a little child, I do not know how to go out or come in, and your servant is in the midst of the people whom you have chosen, a great people so numerous that they cannot be numbered or counted. Give your servant therefore an understanding mind so you govern your people, able to discern between God and evil, for
good
who
and
can
evil.
Govern cannot read able to discern between good and evil, for who can govern this your great people. It pleased the Lord that Solomon had asked this. God said to him, "Because you have asked this and have not asked for yourself long life or riches or for the life of your enemies, but have asked for yourself understanding to discern what is right, I now do according to your word. Indeed, I give you wise and a discerning mind. No one like you has been before you, and no one like you shall arise after you. I give you also what you have not asked, both riches and honor all your life. No other king shall compare with you. If you will walk in my ways, keeping my statutes and my commandments as your father David walked, then I will lengthen your life." Then Solomon awoke. It had been a dream. He came to Jerusalem, where he stood before the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord. He offered up burnt offerings and offerings of well-being and provided a feast for all his servants. Solomon's wisdom in judgment. Later, two women who were prostitutes came to the king and stood before him. The one woman said, "Please, my lord, this woman and I live in the same house, and I gave birth while she was in the house." Then on the third day after I gave birth, this one, I didn't know they were prostitutes. This is fucking amazing, because that's not what you're told in school. You're just told it's two women. I didn't know they were prostitutes.
It's almost like it's important to read things for yourself.
"Then on the third day after I give birth, this woman also gave birth. We were together. There was no one else with us in the house. Only the two of us were in the house. Then this woman's son died in the night because she lay on him. She got up in the middle of the night and took my son from beside me while your servant slept. She laid him at her breast and laid her dead son at my breast. When I rose in the morning to nurse my son, I saw that he was dead. But I didn't even know all of this. This is fucking crazy. I saw that he was dead, but when I looked at him closing closely in the morning, clearly it was not the son I had mourned. But the other woman said, no, this the living son is mine, and the dead son is yours. The first said, no, the dead son is yours, and the living son is mine. So they argued before the king. Then the king said, this is my son that is alive, and your son is dead. While the other says, not so, your son is dead, and my son is the living one. So the king said, bring me a sword. And they brought a sword before the king. The king said, divide the living boy in two, then give half to the one and the half to the other one. But the woman whose son was alive said to the king, because compassion for her son burned within her, please, Lord, give her the living boy. Certainly do not kill him. The other said, it shall be neither mine nor not yours divided. Then the king responded, give the first woman the living boy. Do not kill him. She is the mother. All Israel heard of the judgment that the king had rendered, and they stood in awe of the king because they perceived that the wisdom of God was in him to execute justice. Thanks be to God. Man, I fucking love that story. This is even better with the details.
Yeah, I told you. This is a pretty interesting storyline. Wait, I want to go back a little bit, though, because when one of the things that David was telling Solomon to do was keep all the statutes and laws of the Lord, I want everybody to remember that includes slavery. Like, that's a big part of these statutes. And there was, like, slavery in that story. And the problem with that story wasn't that, what's his name? Was it Joe? What was the name of the guy he killed? Or Shimei. Was that it? Yeah, Shimei. He told Shimei he could build a house, and, you know, two of his slaves rightfully ran off because being a slave sucks. And so he left, even though he promised David he wouldn't leave his house. He was basically on house arrest. He left to go get his slaves back. And when Solomon found out, he was like, oh, I'm going to kill you now, because I had told you, you know, it doesn't matter that your slaves ran off. That's your problem. So he ended up killing him over him chasing his slaves. But it's just interesting to me. No one has a problem with slavery. It's super cool.
Yes, I think that they might have. Maybe he was just, you know, like everything, and he didn't think about slavery. Who knows?
But to me, it's just an interesting thing. The God of the, you know, the all-knowing, all-beneficent, you know, like, God of the universe, benevolent, thank you, the all benevolent God of the universe was, you know, just like, you know, I just don't like those people as much as I like the Israelites. They do barbecue the way I like,
which is weird, because you created all of them supposedly. So
yeah, it's very weird. It's yeah, like I said, these are just,
maybe God operates like, you know, like a parent who has a favorite kid.
Okay. Yes, I think it's very similar to that.
Which I don't think is...
It's not cool. Yeah, it's not something that's... It doesn't lead to peace. I know that much. And okay, so now we can go to chapter 3, which is Solomon waking up from a dream, which to me is never all that convincing. If someone's like, oh my gosh, I had a dream. And it's like, yeah, you know, we all have dreams. But I know a lot of people like to put a lot of significance on their dreams. I remember for the longest time I used to keep a dream journal. I was obsessed with my dreams, and dreaming is really, really cool. But I think we may put more significance on it than we need to. Most of the evidence points to it's just our brain trying to solve problems in our unconscious state. And that's why it's all jumbled.
I mean, I feel like dreams play a big part in a lot of like TV and things that I've seen. Like it's pretty much what you just said. Like, the dreams mean something, but it's your brain trying to solve a problem in an unconscious state.
Yeah, like, I don't think, I'm not actually saying dreams mean anything. I don't think they're all that meaningful.
Well, I think they do, but okay.
I like I said, I think us trying to, just outside of the context.
So do you, let me ask you this. So then do you think that when you don't dream, because I don't dream every night. I guess some people might.
You just don't remember it. If you reach REM sleep, you're dreaming.
Okay, fucking nerd.
Yes.
I don't remember my dreams every night.
Yeah.
So do you think the fact that I don't remember the dreams all of the time is a sign that I'm more, my mind is more at peace versus the times that I do actually remember the dreams?
I don't know if there's evidence for that.
Okay. Cool.
But yeah, But he had this dream where he's talking to God, and God tells him, like, you know what? I like you because you asked me, you know, you asked to be smart instead of, you know, lots of money and stuff. Oh, he also married he made an alliance with Pharaoh of Egypt and took Pharaoh's daughter.
Yeah,
then to celebrate, they had a sacrifice. And once again, when I hear sacrifice, I'm seeing a barbecue. Like,
so somebody's okay.
I mean, that's the way it's been described. Like, you're building an altar or a grill, and then you build a fire on it, and then you put the animal, you kill the animal, and put it on the fire. Cook it and then eat it. Sounds like barbecue.
Yeah. So
I mean, they make it sound like it's this holy procedure, but you know, keep in mind these were some very dirty, dusty people. Like, it was just barbecue, y'all.
Well,
and but God liked it. To me, it's just, well, it's just too many parallels. Everything God likes is the same thing men like.
I mean, so men, barbecue, bitches, and
okay, so power. Let's get to the story you got excited about. The, you know, splitting the baby in two. This is a story. It's, and like you said, like, usually the way it's told to us in church, they leave out a couple of details. So, to me, what was always weird about the story was that it seemed like kind of a low-level problem for the king.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, I like those.
Yeah, I mean, when you put it like that, I never thought about that. But when you say it, like, it does kind of seem like.
Because what king would even, like, rule between any problem that any prostitutes were having?
But see, I feel like I always have images anytime I, and this might just be my brain making shit up, but I feel like every time I see stuff in movies or TV, there's always a situation like this where people just are coming before, like, a person of power and having their problems discerned.
I feel like this would be solved by, they're working in a brothel, it'd be solved by the madam. Like, think about Game of Thrones, and just because there was a brothel in that series, lots of prostitutes, they get pregnant sometimes. Like, if there was a squabble, they wouldn't go to the Iron Throne to have it, you know, decided. Like, you just, Littlefinger would have probably, and actually not even Littlefinger, he'd probably have his manager solve that problem. It wouldn't even make it to Littlefinger. So the fact that these women are before the king, what it kind of tells me is that these might have been two prostitutes that he frequented, and that these might have been his children, and that's why he was weighing.
You know, you would make an excellent actor. Thank in the you. Sense of, in the sense of, in acting,
you have to find motivations.
You're given you know, you're giving scripts sometimes as cold reads, and they're always like, well, the questions you're supposed to ask is who, what, when, where, like, who am I? What do I want out of the scene? Why am I here? Where am I? And, like, look how you just did that. Kudos to you. Because I did not even go there. I didn't even think, like, oh, maybe he's fucking these girls. That's why they thought they could come to him.
It just generally, to me, in life and all points
maybe
in time,
it was his kid.
Yeah. Like, because if he's the king of Israel, like, once again, why would he be deciding between two prostitutes, two of the lowest people in the rungs of society, talking to the highest rung of society over this? To me, it would only be because he had a personal interest in it, because he was fucking both of them, and there's a likelihood that these were both his children. But, like I said, they were low-level women, so they wouldn't be to the level of concubine or wife.
Yeah.
But, because even in Game of Thrones, King Baratheon, the only time we ever really talked to any of the prostitutes who had a baby was because it was one of his kids. And a lot of times they do pay a premium just to be like, yeah, I'm just fucking her, so don't let anybody else fuck her. I'm fucking her.
I wonder if this is totally not this, but also still deals with prostitutes and shit.
Ooh.
What do you have to do to bounce up from prostitute to concubine to mistress to wife material?
People aren't going to like this. People aren't going to like this, but this is the truth. You have to suck a mean dick. Like, that's pretty much, that'll do it. Historically. This was like a throwaway line from Sex and the City, but it was like the truest shit ever. And Samantha, they were like at brunch or whatever, and they're talking, and Samantha just says, "Women could rule the world if we perpetually gave men blowjobs." And what's so funny to me is that that is very, very true. It's funny, but it's also true, and we're not willing to do it.
You feel like it's beneath you.
Like, and that's for control of the world. Like, we could really, because then Sarah Jessica Parker's character was like, well, at least our hands would be free to greet dignitaries and stuff. Because we're just using our mouth.
Well, also, this is a working title, but that I use, but because I might one day write an essay about this, but the there's like a dating paradox, because I feel like what you just said is true. Women feel like, some women probably understand that they could probably get a lot more if they suck a mean dick, but also they're unwilling to do it because of a lot of reasons, I think, and also some of those are kind of conditions placed on them by society and or men, who are like, well, you can only suck my dick. If you suck too many people's dicks, then you're just a fucking whore and you're out for everybody. So it kind of creates this vicious cycle of like, women are scared to have too much sex because then they won't be considered wife material. But on the other end of that, because there's always an exception to the rule, these hoes be getting wifed up, and it's because they know how to suck a mean dick. So
I think Chris Rock said that. He's like, good pussy will get you an apartment. He was like, good head will get you the ring.
And a lot of women that I've dated who have this like gold pussy complex where they feel like they have to make you wait to do anything sexual with them, they seem to not be, they're still single. Whereas the girls who I know who will pretty much let you fuck them the first day, or in they're enthusiastic about the sexual encounters, they have a lot of men callers at their door. So
sure. I think that, wait, how do we keep doing this? Like, we this time we went from King.
No, this is the point of this podcast, is to fucking take elements of the Bible and incorporate them or interpret them as they relate to real.
Okay, so we went from like the ascension of Solomon to blowjobs.
Well, yes, but I mean, it did have the throughway through that was prostitutes.
Well, for one, thank you for agreeing with me about my previous comment about how, like, yes, like a lot of these, even though this was maybe 5,000-6,000 years ago, a lot of the same sort of social and sexual politics are still the same, because people are essentially biologically, we're pretty much still the same. Because I love sort of throne and palace intrigues, because this would be similar too if you study the history of Versailles. It would be very similar. I'm actually, my daughter's really interested in like the Anne Boleyn and Henry VIII story, so we've been watching The Tudors, and mm-hmm. just how Anne Boleyn's father, he was a very shrewd political mover and used his daughters to, you know, get ahead, because he knew he'd have more influence with the king if, you know, he's, you know, getting his rocks off. And his, and Anne Boleyn kind of played it the best, where she's like you said, she's not coming off of it until she gets the ring. Like, you know, and she was able to, it's crazy to me. I was trying to explain to my daughter how deep this is. Part of why we are the religion we are right now is because Henry VIII wanted to fuck Anne Boleyn. Like, it seems overly simplistic and reductive, but that is part of the reason why the Catholic Church had to fracture, because he was mad at the Pope, because he wasn't able to divorce his or get an annulment from his first wife. Because Anne Boleyn wouldn't fuck him until he married her.
And, you know, I see that because I was just, In my rehearsal last night, I was around some people, a woman, and she was, well, just people. They were talking about how long they'd been married. But this woman brought up that her brother had been divorced 4 times. And literally in my head, I was thinking, I wonder if that is because, well, the fact that he continues to get remarried is because he wanted to feel not guilty about having sex. Because mm-hmm. I've heard people say that, like, they get married to have the sex.
I want
to
do things the right way.
Yeah. So, I don't know.
Yeah, it's really kind of messed up. It like I said, if this book were a good example of how to live your life, I would agree with you, you know, Christians who say that. But what we're, that's why I wanted to do a podcast where we read through it, because when I just say it's not a very good book, people are like, you just say that because you want to sin. And to them, the only sin they think about is sex. Yeah. And so for me, it's like, okay, well, yeah, I do want to have a fulfilling sex life, but that's not the issues I take with the Bible. The Bible actually isn't giving you a ton of advice about sex. Like, we, not really. There's some here and there. But for the most part, they're just telling you how to sacrifice animals and how to, what people to kill.
Yeah.
It's been most of what we've been covering so far. So, and then the rest of it is kind of, like we said, filled in by the church. And like you said, they leave out a lot of stuff.
Yeah,
because like I said, that like what we read added a lot of context to that Samuel, that Solomon story about splitting the baby.
Yeah, because I never knew like why these two women came in. I think, and maybe it was said that they lived together and like one rode over, but I never understood why they lived together and all that other shit. So this did add a lot of context. Also, I want to point, like, that was kind of cruel of how he solved this problem.
Yeah.
But it was also very smart.
Very
too.
Gangster. Like, it was very, you know, Han Solo.
Yeah, it was very, like, he's like,
bring me a
knife.
Like, he's like, bring me a sword. It's like, the fuck?
Yeah, I never really believed
the idea that the one, or maybe she was just stupid and evil, but like the one prostitute who was like, well, fine, split it in half. I'll take the left half. It's like, would, I mean, like, and then he was, and the other one who was like, no, let her have the baby. And
well, because I think only a real, only, not only a real, but I think,
like,
for
I
the
said,
context,
like, even
only
if,
a mother would be like, I would much rather my child live, even if it's without me.
But I feel like even the fake mom wouldn't want the baby cut up.
Yeah, no, for sure.
That's all I'm saying. Like, even if I was the one who stole the baby.
Well, I was always told, like, it was more so the reaction of the real mom versus, like,
let me see how they were listening.
Because it didn't really give context. Like, the other woman was like, okay, cool. It just said that the real mom was like, no. She can just have it.
Okay. All right. Well, what are we going to talk about next time on the Bible Breakdown?
Next time on the Bible Breakdown, we'll be talking about Kings, 1 Kings 5, 6, and 7. Wait, no. I'm sorry. 4, 5, 6. 4, 5, 6. And we'll be talking about Solomon's administrative officers. We'll be going talking about preparations and materials for the temple. And we'll be talking about Solomon finally builds that temple. So
it sounds like things are about to get boring again.
Very fucking boring and also extremely fucking long from what I can tell.
Oh, boy.
Actually, no.
Oh, okay.
I got a pretty short one. You got some.
And mine will be on interior design. So, yeah. Like I said, God hasn't had time to abolish slavery, but he did have time to get into the furnishings of the temple.
Yeah.
Gotta say.
Sound like a God to me.
Gotta say. Not my priorities. Not my, this isn't something, and I understand why people get frustrated with us, because I know we sound super arrogant and uppity, but it is because this isn't good enough for me.
You know, I think you can say that as a person who reads a lot of books and has explored a lot of media. I think a lot of people don't do that for X amount of reasons. And now that I'm starting to do more things that are like cultural classics, such as like Pride and Prejudice and Richard III and Midsummer Night's Dream, it's forced me to like kind of explore and read things that I might not have before. And it changes your view. Like, I learned some shit about Jane Austen in my reading, and I was just like, man, she's actually fucking prolific. She was writing from a very young age. And, you know, and she died pretty relatively young, like late 30s, 40s. So I was like, oh, I didn't even realize like the breadth of things that she seemingly accomplished in such a short amount of time, which is fascinating. And so I say that to say, I don't know. People don't read any other book other than this, so they don't get that experience. And so everything that they are basing their life on kind of comes from reference from this. And I know that because of people I've been around, like they'll say shit, even if they claim not to be super Christian-y, like they'll say shit and I'm like, that sounds like Bible speak or very conservative speak. It's not very, I don't know. But anyway, read more books is what I'm getting at. Read more books.
Take explore in more experiences. Like, even if you don't want to read, like, listen to books. Like, I know for some people, like, reading is, our brains are all wired different, right? So for some people, reading, even though reading for me is very pleasant, I know it's not for everybody. So, like, even if you can't just sit and read, like, listen to an audiobook, listen to different podcasts, like, take in as many different perspectives as you can, because what you truly end up finding out is we're all the same. We have more in common than we have differences, that's for sure.
I have a strange relationship with reading, because I don't sit down and actually read physical books too often. But then when I do, such as starting to read this Pride and Prejudice, I'm like, oh yeah, I actually enjoy this. Yeah. Why don't I do this more?
Reading feels great. It's because you have to, I always said it's a type of meditation, because you can't do anything else. Like, you can't like sit and read a book and watch the game. Like, you can maybe like read while the commercials are on or something like that. But when you're taking on someone else's narrative, you have to shut yours down. Yeah. And
I have a whole process now. I have like,
get some coffee.
Because with the advancement of technology, we'll get like coffee or tea or something, mm-hmm. but the advancement of technology, because I actually don't like to read. I can sometimes, depending on the environment, but I don't like to read with like other background shit going on. Like, I like it to be either pretty relatively silent, or I'll put in like some earbuds and I'll turn on like an instrumental playlist and then I'll read. It's fucking,
it's great. I love reading. That's one of my faves. So for everyone who's listening, your body belongs to you. Thank you for joining us. You got anything to say to the people?
Get in touch with your kinks. Figure out what those are. Because I just had a discovery about what mine are. And also, be curious, not judgmental. TK out. Bible Breakdown Podcast at gmail.com. Bye.